So you're running out of closet space. The good news? You don't need to stop shopping. You just need to start selling with The RealReal. The RealReal is the world's largest and most trusted resource for authenticated luxury resale. Whether it's that mini bag that can't even fit your phone, or those boots you never fully broke in, The RealReal handles everything from photography and copywriting to shipping and pricing. So you can just sit back, get paid, and make room for things that actually feel like you. And with 10,000 plus new arrivals every single day from top designers like Prada, Celine, Louis Vuitton, and Loewe, all for up to 90% off retail, you're bound to find something perfectly on brand to fill that extra closet space with. Plus, right now, you can get an extra $100 to shop when you sell for the first time. Make room for what feels like you. Go to TheRealReal.com to start selling and get your extra $100 to keep shopping at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
Let notes to the hour. These songs of our mind.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Songs of Our Lives. I am Brad Rose. I am an artist, a composer, a writer, the founder of Foxy Digitalis, and someone who thinks about music and sound far more than is healthy. Each week, I invite on a guest to talk about the music and the songs that have meant a lot to them and left their mark. Previous guests include Matt Evans, Andrew Weathers, Sean McCann, Randall Dunn, Danya, Kalia Vandiver, Ryan Sawyer, Chris Williams, Patrick Shirishi. The list goes on and on and on. But this week, I'm really excited to have Sam Wentz on the show. Sam used to make music under the name Post Moves. That's, I think, what a lot of people know his stuff as. He co-runs the Lobby Art label, but he's got a new solo album out under his own name called Language at an Angle that is out on January 30th, and it's a remarkable record. I don't know. I love Sam's stuff as far as, like, pedal steel and that kind of thing goes. He's really been creating some of my music in that world over the last few years, and his label Lobby Art, by the way, that he co-runs is one of the best labels around there, if you ask me. But yeah, Language and Angle is, I don't know, it's a record that's kind of just really, it keeps creeping up on me more and more. The more I listen to it, the more I find that I connect to it. I hate to use the word meditative because that can be very cliche, but there is that quality to it. It's a really beautiful record, and it's really cool to see Sam kind of step out and doing stuff under his own name. And huge recommendation on that. So that comes out, like I said, January 30th on Lobby Art. He's got a show February 5th in Philly, and yeah, it was really great to connect and talk to him about all this stuff, and I hope you all enjoy it. My guest today is a musician, a lap steel extraordinaire, a label boss, a composer. It's Sam Wentz. So welcome to the show.
Woo. Thanks for having me, Brad.
So how's it going?
It's going pretty well. It's kind of a crisp. I'm in Philly. Got some snow last night. Crisp, sunny day. Just played album release show last week Roulette, New York, and so I feel like I'm kind of coming down from that. A lot went into that show, so now I'm like just decompressing a bit. Gonna do one in Philly in a couple weeks, but that felt like kind of a big lift, so yeah. I'm just like I'm kind of just not touching things for a little bit.
Yeah. So the album in question is Language at an Angle, which comes out on the 30th on Lobby Art, the label that you co-run, of course. The first obvious question I have is that you've been working under the name Post Moves for 13 years, 15 albums. And I'm curious, what prompted the decision to release this under your own name? And how does that What does that feel like as an artist for you?
Yeah. I feel that there's probably a few different prongs of, you know, a response. I think that, so I had, Postmove started, it was like a recording project, solo recording project. And when I was making more kind of song based, with like songwriting lyrics and whatnot, kind of form of style of music. And when that kind of iteration of it ended, when I left I lived in Portland, Oregon for 10 years, mm-hmm. I was just like, oh, well, I had been starting to do this solo pedal steel electronics, you know, kind of more experimental performance, but I liked the name. It resonated. And I was like, I'm going to keep that. People often mispronounce my last name. So I was like, all right, maybe I'll just, you know, project name going. And then, yeah, just as time went on, I felt just more distance from it. And I ended up releasing, after probably 8 or 9 years, I guess, of a songs record last year called Flesh Reel, mm-hmm. Which I kind of quietly released. But it felt like some sort of full circle moment where I'd come back around to this initial form and kind of, to me, like buttoned up the project a bit. And it felt, just an increase, you know, just changes in my life and things that just felt more like I wanted to, I don't know, have my name attached to the work that I was making. The music was feeling more and more intimate and personal. And I think I didn't really know how it would feel, but now that the album's kind of like coming through, I'm really happy with having made that shift. It feels like, I don't know. I guess the other thing I'll mention is like, this album is the first album I've made that is like a total representation of my live set. All prior albums were like some sort of mixture of like studio stuff and some things I would perform live. So it kind of gave Postmove like a recording project kind of feel. Right. This one feels like, hey, this is like what happens when I play live. And yeah, that coincide, that just being with my name felt really appropriate. And, I guess that's kind of the main thing.
Yeah, there. No, that last part, a lot of that resonates with me as someone who has had and has many monikers and has been doing a lot more stuff under my own name. That last part especially resonates as like in the last year, especially I've been thinking a lot more about my live performance versus recorded output and then kind of, marrying the two in a way. I don't think I'd kind of put that together with my own stuff. It's like, oh yeah, a lot of the stuff I do under my own name is representative of what I would do, what I do live. Anyway, so
yeah,
you just kind of gave me some insight into my own practice.
And it's just something intangible. You kind of feel it. And as like, I mostly performed solo up until really the performance last week, which was like this 8 hours. Just felt like, all right, me being solo, people are like, what's your name? I'm like, well, this project, you know, what everyone does is like the project name is X, but I'm this. And I wanted to simplify it. It's like,
I mean, it happens a lot on this show when I'm doing the intro and it's a person, but they record under a name. And I'm always like, do you want me to introduce you as the name or your name? And
totally.
And at the same time, everybody does what feels right. It doesn't does it ultimately matter? Yeah, the
rule, you know, it's like, I remember I was listening to years ago, an interview with Bill Callahan when he changed, he went from Smog to Bill Callahan and how the Jack City was like, don't do it. It's going to mess up. It's like, do what you want. It's your life. It's your music. It's your work. It's like whatever decision, you know. I mean, I'm not obviously known as Bill Callahan. I don't think I had to worry about losing too many listeners or anything. I was like, what do I really have to sacrifice here? So
you didn't have your label that you co-run telling you not to do.
Right. I took on the persona of label boss talking to myself as artist saying, you can't change your name. I just had this internal monologue battle between
Sam as label person, Sam as artist.
Man, you know, hey, we all continue
voices in our head, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes they have arguments. Well, I do think that is interesting, like with the connection to the sort of live performance, because I did one of the things mentioned sort of in the liner notes is how you perform this stuff for a year, like all over the place, like Arizona to Japan, I think, like all over the place. And I'm curious, like during that time, like kind of what happened with the music? Did it change through those repeated performances? Did it evolve, or was it like, yeah, like as you got to the point of recording it, you know, like how had it moved from A to B?
Definitely. Yeah. Like, you know, I think, again, that's like part of why, again, and it ties into the going by the name and just like the final place that I got to with this piece of work was like, I just had spent a lot of time, you know, both in performances and touring and just, you know, here in my studio, just like refining these, you know, really granular levels of, you know, what the music was, you know, just to like, oh, when I blow with this metal pipe, you know, and I do, you know, this is like, if I do it on that string, I get this resonance and this feedback, so, you know, and just like kind of still wanting to make sure there's an improvisatory looseness within the work, but also like being really, you know, discerning about the sounds that I was, you know, searching for, and not knowing what they were. So, I could look back, like the performances that were happening earlier on, and saying, oh yeah, like, and changing, you know, making adjustments and changes. And then, like culminating in the performance last week where it was this big band, it was like, cause in the recording, a few of the members in the band had recorded on it, like Stan Gilsman on piano, Bill Henriksen violin, Matthew Lee sax, or bass clarinet, Jack Bronstein clarinet. But some of the other players, for instance, like Victor Villar Branco, is this incredible vibraphonist. I played vibraphone on the record and like, I'm not a vibraphone player. I can like hack my way through it. But like, you know, so having him play vibraphone on in the performance was like, oh, it's opening up in this different way now. Yeah. And it just feels like this organ, you know, the material feels like this organism that kind of can like take on different lives. And it is just like, it keeps, I always really liked, you know, some interview with David Berman about, you know, how we always would, you know, people like, oh, think that all his writing and lyrics were just so this final form and so decided and discerning. And he was like, oh, I would change everything like in that, in those songs. I'd rewrite the lyrics if I could, you know? And so I love, that feels really like appropriate for this music, is that it's still changing to me, you know?
That's awesome.
Like, it's recorded, but, you know, last week it sounded totally different. And we'll, you know, probably next time we play, it'll be different as well, you know? And that's an exciting place for me.
Yeah, that's awesome. Before we dive into the songs, I do want to quickly at least mention, or like the album title, Language and Angle. I love the album title. It's, to me, it kind of, you know, suggests the idea of sort of viewing language as this, a process rather than fixed meaning, which, you know, when you're just describing the music, I mean, it's so my question was going to be like, how does it manifest in the music itself? But I guess in a way you kind of just explained it.
I mean, that's really does kind of like sum it up, I think, but even not on like this kind of macro sense, but like I think even just the process of making it, like thinking a lot about gestures and, you know, to me, it's very physical. My playing on it is very physical. I feel a lot of the sounds that I'm working with are, you know, deriving from, you know, just different bodily ways of relating to, particularly the pedal steel guitar, but, you know, other instruments and sounds, worlds. And and it just really felt like there was kind of like gestural, guttural, like kind of like glottal, gestural glottal. This is my alliteration for the day. But like, yeah, like this kind of forming of language, you know, and that it, and like, and never wanting to be didactic and being like, this is how you define a particular, you know, thing. It's kind of having a wide aperture, and embracing sort of, you know, just, you know, chance and
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's a great title. So
I appreciate props that.
I really love the title.
It was initially one of the track titles. And then I was, because like the track, you know, naming tracks and album titles are be challenging. And I was like, that's the album title.
It was a good decision, at least from my perspective. All right. Well, I don't have any great segue here from that to going into this, so I'm not even going to try. But going to get into talking about some songs. And of course, as always, to start, I'm going to ask, what is the first song that you remember?
All right. So the first song I remember, there, you know, when I was thinking about this question, a few kind of like some memories came back in mind, but I think it had to be Geek Sync Breath by Green Day, which is off Insomniac. My brother and I were very early to really kids who had like, you know, were bringing CDs into like class and like, oh, you gotta like, you know, get a Green Day CD. I mean, I was my grandmother got us, my brother and I, both Insomniac when I was 5 and he was 7.
Oh, wow.
My first show was Green Day when I was 7, at the Worcester Palladium. That was the Nimrod Tour. But anyways, Geek Sync Breath, Insomniac. I had a babysitter that was like, he would come over and we'd play that CD. And I thought of it, everything about that world and that sound was just so cool. And I like, that's when I was like, this is just what coolness is like, everything encapsulated in like Billy Joe Armstrong and like, you know, the kind of chug dun 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 dun, you know, like, I mean, what better sound is there than that? So, that's kind of that first memory.
Yeah, no, the first four Green Day records. I'm trying to think of the order of them. I know it was like 1039 Slap America Plunk, Dookie. Was Insomniac after Dookie, or was there one in between?
Insomniac came right after Dookie. I think it was like 94, 95. Yeah.
Like, man, I still fuck with a lot of those songs.
It was first two. I mean, 1039 Slap and Kerplunk. I mean, those are still epically spectacular, like whatever you would call it, power pop. Like before it got so, you know, obviously that was heyday Lookout Records era. And
absolutely. I've talked about it a lot, that whole era of like pop punk, whatever that, like Lookout, right? I mean, I still think Operation Ivy is one of the like greatest bands that ever exist. Yeah. Hell, my buddy Sam, you know, Sam, because you did a thing on Debacle. We did a whole fucking Rancid podcast for 2 years. So literally, you know, this music is all very for me, but I hadn't listened to Geek Stink Breath in a long time. Like whenever I saw it and I was listening, I was like, man, it's still kind of like, and it's just, yeah, I don't know.
Well, I feel like because Dookie, you know, reigns supreme, which, you know, as it really should. So I feel Insomniac kind of gets glossed over a bit, but it's still, and I don't know, I think about that sound, that chugging, like, you know, you hear that in like Radiohead Creep, and you hear that at like Rage Against the Machine. Just like, that's what I loved about Rage, was just like the, you know, like the palms, the palm strings with like distortion, you know, and there'd be like, I don't know
it's
what it
was. Such a specific sound, and it just, that's a good call. And it always seemed like, you know, they're making this music that on the surface is very simple. But they're all, especially like Mike and Trey, like they're such good musicians. Like,
yeah.
It's, I, whenever people would ask me about, I remember when I would be, I don't know, I was a teenager and like trying to start punk bands and with people who didn't really know anything about punk around here. And I would be like, just listen to Trey Cool. Just like,
yeah,
try to mimic that, even though you're not gonna be able to, cause he's like a metronome, but like, I don't know. Anyway, I went down a whole memory hole with Green Day the last week and it's been kind of delightful. And they still seem to be like, I don't know what their music sounds like now, cause I haven't really listened to it, but as just people, they still seem like pretty rad dudes. So that seems, you know.
Yeah. I haven't heard anything bad, so I'm just gonna.
Right. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. They're still just like, yeah, I don't think I connect to the music anymore, but that they're making, but currently, but as long as they're being decent humans.
Yeah. I'm doing that. Okay. What is a song that either makes you cry or if it doesn't actually make you cry, it just kind of puts you in that space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For this one, I had, Immortal Field by Johnny Coley. This is the last song on the record Antique Sadness, which was put out by my friends, who run Sweet Wreath Records. Who everyone should check out. One of the most like exciting and bizarre and just like really heartfelt labels around. And when I came to, when I found this Johnny record, I mean, the whole thing is so like, it just floored me. Johnny passed away last year, sadly. He was in his mid 70s. This kind of legendary, really, living, outside of Birmingham, not really well known, a poet and put a light, but a real like deep history of performing with improvised musicians. And then, and this track in particular, Immortal Field, just like captures this like this suspended sort of state. He's like, he has this deep Alabaman drawl,
right?
And the music behind it is like this lush but broken kind of acoustic instrumentation, droning parts, and all those factors as Johnny just kind of floats on top. Like, you can just see him formulating these words and his syntax and the way he syllabizes things is just, I don't know, it's so affecting. And that track in particular, has moved me to tears in the past, and pretty much every time it's a guaranteed like goosebump kind of song. And Johnny's work has become just really fundamental to my life. When I got a chance to help release his last record with Mississippi Records, and there's a few more in the works. Just kind of like, I don't know, but really, when I think about an artist, I think about what it means to be an artist, and kind of living outside of, the mainstream sort of, lens of things. Like, I just get so inspired and so touched when I get a real sense of like someone really committed to a life of living in this domain of like this activated mind and spirit, and like you can't help, you just get a sense like he had no other choice but to be a poet and an artist.
Right.
Like, you just like, no, that's meant to be. So
I missed this record last year, so I'm really glad that you had it on here, because it totally floored me. I think there's something so magical about, especially on the whole thing, but really especially on this track, the way like you were describing with the music, like it feels like musically there's this tension, and it's really beautiful is the best I can come up with, but it captures the feeling of everything he's saying so well. And then like together, it just takes it to another level. And it, like you said, it's like, it's even thinking about it, I'm getting goosebumps. It's so good.
And Immortal, these, I think that I'm just trying to pull up, you know, the one of the lines where he just has these like almost like whatever, I don't know, couplets or something. I don't know what poetry term is. But immortal creatures, immortal fields. I don't know. He does a way like something even just in that, like you can, there's some sense of what he's talking about. And then some sense that it's like this, he's, you know, I don't know. There's access to his phrasing and his words, and yet there's also something so mysterious, and unknown, and yeah, that's just so. Just love that, you know.
Yeah, it's awesome. I will I'll link to the album in the show notes because people should check it out. And completely agree about Sweet Wreath. It's a label that anytime I get an email from them, I have no idea what to expect, but I know it's going to be worth hearing. And that is always exciting to me because it's there's something really beautiful about that label. Okay, what is the song that puts you in a better mood?
So this one I had The Minstrel by Philip Caron and the Artistic Heritage Ensemble, which just like, I think I first heard this on a Mississippi mixtape, you know, 15 years ago. Yeah. And then I think, you know, if you know, like this, where like this handwritten, I was like, what is this track? And then was looking at the handwritten track list. And like, of course it's like, you know, Eric's like, really horrible written handwriting, not horrible, but really small. And so I was like, I don't know what this is. And I think it evaded me for years what that track actually was. But it's just, you know, man, that groove is fucking infectious. Oh, like it's just,
it's so good.
I mean, you can't help it. You're just like, you're just totally wrapped up in it. And I don't know if they're saying got to get myself away from him or get myself away from pain. I've always heard get myself away from pain, which I just, and I got to get it right away, like, which I love. I mean, him also could work, but I've always heard it, got to get myself away from pain. And that's like, that would stick in my head. And it's just jubilant, you know?
It's such a good combination of this, like you said, this infectious group. Like you can't, I can't sit still if I'm listening to it. Yeah. And but it's also, it's so catchy. And it kind of genuinely just rips. Like
it's so hard. So hard. You feel like they're like coming apart at the seams while also holding the groove together, which is like, exactly what you want.
If you can, walking that, threading that needle, walking that lot, that is, it is a hard thing to do. And when it's done this well, I mean, it's all timer, man.
It is. Yeah.
Speaking of all timers, this is everybody's favorite song, favorite question, of course. What is objectively the best song of all time? Oh my
God. I love your questions. They like, and the kind of like, because right, it's like, it's fun to be kind of declarative and bombastic. Like, this is the song. Of course, like, I never lived my life thinking that's the one song. Right. it has you thinking this particular way, which is fun. And for me, this was, I mean, weirdly, it's a cover. Like the original screen, but it's At Last I'm Free by Robert Wyatt, cover of Chic, which again, like first time I heard it, you're just like, I'm stuck, you know, like,
right.
I mean, Robert Wyatt's voice is just like hip, like narcotic. You're just like, you are so brought in by his voice, and then the thumping kind of nature of like dun dun, you know, it has this real like march to it, and it's kind of, you know, it's like the drums sometimes are out of time. You know, it's not like it's like overly clean, which is like, which again, like it's. It's obviously something I love when it's not like too pristine, right. and his like quivering voice, and then like At Last I'm Free, just like, I mean, you know, just repeating that over and over again, like that's if I wanted a song to say anything about anything at all about life and what it means to be human, At Last I'm Free would be the thing that I would want shouted, you know, from a rooftop. Right. So
I love how he captured, because it's like At Last I'm Free kind of feels like this platitude that we hear, but the way he sings it and the way the whole song's put together, like, captures that, like, the cost of that. Like, yeah. It is so heavy, and it's like, I don't know. And this, it feels like, you know, freedom and loss are sort of the same thing, right? Mm-hmm. And or sometimes mm-hmm. the same thing. And oh man, it is. Yeah. I love the Chic version too, but they feel like, to me, they're like two totally different songs. It's like hard for me to even keep them connected, right? Because they're both great in their own way, but yeah.
And I think, like, and yeah, knowing, like, right, like Robert Wyatt's, like, you know, relationship with communism and like how that finds its way into his work. Like, he's thinking and living out, like, it's not just a platitude. Like, he's someone deeply, deeply held feelings and beliefs. And you hear it too when he comes down, like, in the verses, like the dynamic range between mm-hmm. verse and chorus. And now, love, please listen. And just like, it's so tender. It's like tender, and then like shouting from the rooftops. I mean, like, yeah. So perfect.
Yeah. Man, I hope he lives forever.
I know. Yeah. What a wild trajectory too, like, because I mean, it was right. Wow. I mean, I don't know it. I don't know all the details, but that, like, you know, him falling out of the window and becoming quadriplegic, like, and I think that was when the Soft Machine was ending, and then he goes on to this, like, you know, theme solo, like, just with some of the, I mean, and yeah, just like new, you know, every sounds that are just like he's someone who's like back to, like, there's no rules, you know, about this thing. He's like,
right.
It's like, yeah, knew a Robert Wyatt sound or a he's like, what? It's nothing. Like, I make the music that, you know, I make, you know, and that's just the best.
Yeah, absolutely. God, it's so inspiring. All right, what is the song you used to love, but you've heard it recently? If you think about it now, it doesn't quite do it for you in the same way.
Okay. All right. So this one is hard because it pained me deeply. I was, you know, to put this band and artist here, it's Silver Jews, who are, I mean, I would argue David Berman and Silver Jews made the most important artists in my life, you know? And so to put a song here felt blasphemous. I was like, I had to do some prostrations and atone. Which was the song I put?
Blue Arrangements.
Blue Arrangements, okay. Because I know essentially what I was... I used that as a... it could have been like one of the other ones. Essentially, it's... My the problem Steve with Malcolm. It is not David Berman. It's Stephen Malkmus.
Yes.
And I just I just don't... Like, American Water, I know, gets like talked about as, like, you know, the whatever opus of Silver mm-hmm. Jews, rightly so, but the Steve Malkmus tracks throw me every time, and I'm just like,
same.
Don't want his vibe on that record, like, is kind of just like,
I'm 100% about, with you.
I just don't want it there, and that's really my gripe with it, like,
yeah,
go put that on a Pavement record, let, you know, stop trying to...
Right, that's exactly, I kind of figured when I saw it. When I saw that you picked this, I was like, if it's not because I love this record too, but the Malcolmus tracks take me out of it. And I just feel like Pavement tracks, basically.
Yeah, it's Pavement song. So it's like,
which is, you know, and I had a lot of love for Pavement, if I want to listen to Pavement, I'll listen to Pavement. I want to hear David Berman. That's why I'm here.
Right. The one I will accept was what's the song? The instrumental song on that record. Which feels creepy. And then is it Night Society? Yeah, I think it's Night Society.
Yeah.
Like, that one, like, feels like it could be a Pavement track. But it's but it's instrumental, so I'm like, all right, that can suck.
Right. Right, yeah, because it's, I mean, like, Malkmus's, like, voice and his delivery are so him. You know, so it's like,
it feels totally like Kofi and Shaq, you know, like, yeah. Malkmus and Berman, like, Kofi and Shaq, they got to be on separate teams, you know, like, love and respect to each, but you know, right. you're too big of stars. You're like,
right.
You know, it's just like it's yeah. Your orbits are too huge. You are so identifiable yep. Who you are.
Yeah.
You know, so
do your own thing. Yeah. Okay. Well, what is the song that most people, a lot of people hate it. I don't know. Some group of people hate it. You don't care. You love it.
Another hard one. And this one I think has had I don't truly know like if people hate it. I mean, I think it was panned for a while, but the Renaissance was Neil Young's record Trans and Transformer Man off that. Man. I mean, it's just like a smile on my face. It's goofy.
It's weird as fuck. And it's, yeah, it is.
Yeah. I think I first heard that song and it was like, a solo live, you know, acoustic guitar version. I was, and then hearing the Trans version, right. I could,
yeah.
You know, there's those like Neil fans who are just like, it's only these three records. That it's only when he's doing this one thing, but like, he's such a weirdo and had made so many horrible records and like weird. He took so many chances and like, I'm all about that. And yeah, like
same,
like you're in the 80s thing. I don't know. Like,
yeah, like bust out the vocoder. Like, why not? And you know, the thing I really love about, because I think he did it on MTV Unplugged. I think that's like the, I feel like maybe, and obviously it's totally different, but there's something about this version because it's, you know, you've got all the like with the vocoder and stuff, and it's kind of got this like retro futuristic, like all this robotic kind of vibey shit on it. But it's such a like tender and human song. And that dichotomy is amazing. I love it.
I do too. And you're like, yeah. And it's so funny to like hear Neil's voice through the vocoder and still know it's like Neil Young, even if like we've heard it off in Neil's voice, but like,
yeah,
you know, computerized and digitized, right. You know, and it still has that weird thing going on and little whiny thing and yeah, like just beautiful. And again, and another master of like going from tender to like fucking weird or whatever, right. Like, you know,
it's like, yeah, there is no roadmap for Neil. It's just all over the place and it all, and I don't know, to me, it all makes sense. Maybe not. I don't know. Whatever. Okay. What is the most romantic song?
So this question I was thinking initially, obviously first about like lyrics and what's like the best thing about love and romance, whatever. But then by track title alone, I had to choose this, which is You Are My Ever Lovin' by Henry Flint. That is the most beautiful sentiment, you know, to say to someone. So, you know, just total, you know, like, I don't know. And then musically, it's a funny thing for me to like try to articulate why then, you know, musically it's romantic. You know, this is like 45 minute droning, you know, fiddle piece. But then I think about like being lost in time, like that, like what a track like that does is that it like, you know, you're, it is lost amidst it. Like time kind of ceases. Mm-hmm. And, I think about like love and romance and how, you know, time does kind of constrict and stand still in those spaces. Yeah. And you're just like, there's not a beginning, middle or end, and you're just immersed in it. And, so that feels apt, you know, but yeah, also primarily because of the track title. So,
I like that. That really tracks for me. I love this. I mean, it's such a good piece of music, but it does have that. It's one of those things. It's one of those pieces of music, and I think this really connects what you're saying. Where it's like, yeah, I could listen to this for like 6 hours straight and not even realize I'd been listening to it for 6 hours straight.
Yeah.
And
it's like maybe like being in the house with like your lover, or your partner, and you're like, like a deep conversation. And then like, then you're off. Like then you do the dishes, and then they're like. Whatever, taking the dog on a walk, and you're like, you're just in, you know, you're in it with each other, both in like in like real coming together, and then there's like also these, you know, moments where you're kind of like, oh, there's this presence. I feel a presence, but they're, mm-hmm. you know, it's, you know, it's not just like direct face thing, right. You know?
I mean, yeah, no, like, so last week, my partner, we celebrated our 23rd anniversary.
Wow, and congrats.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, and it's just like, how simultaneously, it's just that number doesn't make sense to me. On like, right. For one, it just feels like so long, but also it feels like there hasn't been a time that we weren't together, you know? And so,
it doesn't exist, I think, in a certain way.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's, I love that answer. When I saw this as your pick, I was like, okay, I know the title I get. I was like, I'm really curious where we're going to go with this. I'm totally on board here. Okay. What is the song that changed your perspective on an artist, either for better or for worse?
So I chose, and this could be the whole album, but I just chose the first track, which is by Ok Young Lee, Here We Are Once Again. And to qualify this for the better, you know, obviously Ok Young Lee, this incredibly talented cellist, multimedia artist, performer, improviser, I knew of her work in that kind of domain, you know. And when this album came out on Shelter Press a handful of years ago, I like, in some ways, the cover was like this, like very beautiful, like kind of blue hued photo, and I was like, this seems like it's not going to be like crazy scratchy cello stuff, but and then it was just like this incredible, like lush orchestrated arrangement with like harp, and I don't know if I don't want to speak on what that instrumentation, but just really like that record is, you know, it's one of these, it's a constant. I come back to that that record constantly. It is so beautiful in such a interesting way. And you're right, I wasn't aware of her practice in that sense, and it made it just like this, just really evolve what I thought about her work.
Yeah, no, I had very similar experience, and then had it again last year with the album she put out on Shelter Press, the Just Like Any Other Day album, which is like field recordings and kind of ambient-ish, and it was like, what? And it's great, and it's so, I mean, she has such, like, I think she's just really good at capturing and sort of translating complex emotions and actions into sound, like, and I always associated her doing that, like, with like the cello and like improvisation stuff. But these two records show how much talent and skill she has in doing that in different formats. And it's just, I don't know. She's one of my absolute like favorite artists. I mean, I loved her before this record, before the one last year, but it's just like another layer to her work and to her practice that I'm blown away.
Isn't it so great to be surprised by an artist like you already that you already loved, and you're just like, whoa, you took me somewhere I did not expect you to take me, you just feel grateful. You're like, thank you, like, whoa, like, what a gift surprise. You know, when you wall up those like artists we love, but when they put out a new album, they're like, oh yeah, that's about what they do, right. You know, which is great, but it's obviously so thrilling to be like, wow, this one took me by surprise.
Yeah, and especially like when it's a surprise, but you can still kind of hear their like sonic DNA in there, and it's I don't know, man, I think she's she's amazing. So I was I'm gonna listen to this record again today because it's a record for any occasion, kind of. Okay, lyrics. What are lyrics? Are you a big lyrics person? Like, can lyrics make or break a song for you? Do you pay close attention to lyrics? Okay.
Definitely.
I mean, so in that vein, what are your favorite lyrics?
Oh, this was tough. I mean, obviously, it was like at first to go right to it, the Silver Jew song with David Berman, and it just became overwhelming. And you know, I tried to. I don't know. I've been around a lot of like songwriters in my life, and perhaps the most influential songwriter and one of the most influential musicians in my life is this artist Jeremy Lee Faulkner, who I met, you know, when I was young and dumb in Portland in college, and he had this project called All Holly Family, which is this kind of really beautiful, like lush, orchestrated folk kind of thing. And then to kind of writing more, you know, kind of country, you know, like cued songs, but with his own weird style. I mean, like you could tell, you know, his guitar playing very informed by just classical guitar and other just, you know, sorts of practices, and lyrically you could, you know, just really evocative. So, And he has, like, again, just like gut punching beauty lyrics. The song I chose is actually this goofier side of just a fun, silly-ish side of his writing, because he also has this incredible humor. So the song's called "My Pool, My Rules." The album from the name of the album, "Shadow Music of the Country." And it's this like real classic, just like, you know, chugging blues kind of riff song, with like a B-bender guitar. But he has like such, I'm just pulling up the lyrics now. And he's also, it's kind of silly, like "My Pool, My Rules," and the songs like, but he weaves in just like this kind of, I don't know, existentialist, this kind of like dread to things, or not dread, but just kind of like positioning one in the world of sorts. And the cops wrote me a ticket. The judge said the amount that I owed. She said, "Glad it isn't prison. I got a job and I'm old now. It's all the same to me. To get to hell, you got a DIG. Make with the poetry. Come on, mama, shake an LEG." And then later in the song, he has this refrain like, "If it's written on a koozie, it's true. What's written on a I'll try to stick around, but what's written on a tombstone is true." And like, I don't know, it's so silly and so like dead on too. And
right,
I just love it.
Yeah, no, this was great. I was, I had never heard this before, and I was, I love that. Again, it's that mix of like two sides of a thing and being able to pull it together in a way that, I don't know. It's like silly and heavy. I don't know.
It's like, "What the hell you got to dig?" Like, fuck, what are you saying there? You spell dig D-I-G so it rhymes? Like, that's brilliant move. Like, right. You just said dig, it wouldn't rhyme. But then if you spelled it, it rhymes. And those little things are like, it's so Jeremy, and it's so, I love it. Yeah,
that's awesome. What song have you or can you listen to the most?
So this is one of my favorite groups, and inspiring, you know, performers, going as Natural Information Society. And I could have chosen either one of these songs. The first two pieces that come off their album Mandatory Reality could have been track "In Memory's Prism," or which is like a 25 minute song, or "Finite," which is like 40 minutes. So I chose "Finite." But honestly, like, I could do the whole six, you know.
Yeah.
Pretty much I'm devoting multiple days a week to still playing that A and B, like, you know, of that record. And yeah, it just always is playing. It feels like it's I don't know. It just does it for me. It just scratches so many itches for me. And it's obviously quite meditative and hypnotic. But it's not, you know, it doesn't play into tropes of like, you know, new agey kind of very twang, you know, like kind of like this trying to like, you know, induce the kind of it feels very real. Like, it doesn't feel like it's just, you know, kind of induced meditative space. It's like the rattling of like the Gimbri and the other elements, Hamid Drake's playing, like everything is very like flesh and real and like present. And it feels very, for like a very like whatever meditative track, it's like very alive to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they're one of the best bands on the planet at this point, and just there's nobody else like them. Okay, what's the last song you completely fell in love with?
I loved this album that came out last year by Feo, F-E-E-O, and I forget the name of the album, but the track I picked was Sandpit. And I could pick a few songs on this album because, yeah, it was just like, this one just kind of floored me. Their voice, it did a lot of things. It brought in, again, just like a lot of different, being like a, you know, a pop song, if you will, with lyrics and more stuff. It brought in like a lot of really interesting like spheres of like, you know, down tempo, ambient, and, you know, and almost, and that's like lo-fi folk, you know, kind of four track recording stuff, and the trip hop, and then their voice, on top of it all, just like floored me.
Yeah, the production of it is so good, like, because it feels, I don't know, like, especially on this track, like, it feels like really intimate and like really close, but then there's like all these sound design elements that, and sort of like even like the spatial aspect where it's kind of like they do interesting stuff with the panning and stuff. It just kind of becomes this, you feel like enveloped in it, and it's really, the whole album, the whole record is really, really good, but this track especially, and it has such like, I don't know, there's like a gravity to it. It's just,
it's like, it's a heavy listen. It's like, you just feel, ensconced. It's very environmental while being still like it's one of those perfect albums of like mixtures of sound, like you said, sound design, like really interesting decisions being made, like spatially, having, you know, different kind of interlude tracks, and then like just really like just strong, forceful songs, like
better. Yeah. All right. What is the song that means the most to you? Not necessarily because of the song itself, but your answer will be self-explanatory here. So, I'm just going to sit back.
So I chose a rendition of Olivier Messiaen's O Sacrum Convivium, done by Susan Alcorn. Susan performed a few different Messiaen pieces. And when I was starting to get to, like, she did the quartet for The End of Time. Yeah, there's so many. I wanted to go in a few different directions there, but I think when I was starting to become aware of Susan's work, like, she has a YouTube page, such a way of like accessing an artist where you just like, they're directly up, you know, it's not the label, it's not the promotional thing, it's just like them like being like, I did this in my apartment, I'm uploading it to YouTube, and like a little personal archive. And you get that, you know, you could tell she's like, this one particular performance is on YouTube, like, she's like in her home. And I could say a whole great deal about Susan and her, you know, impact on my life. But I think I'm trying to like trace, you know, first hearing this piece, and it was, you know, as I was coming into more, a deeper practice with the pedal steel myself, and be curious about, you know, what else, what other capacities is lived in this instrument. And the idea of, performing this classical piece for the pedal steel guitar, just like broke, you know, it was so broke my mind in so many ways. I was like, here, look at the instrument. I was like, wait, you can do that with this? And like, right. And like, and in order to do that, Susan took, I mean, years and years of like, right, transposing, right. Like the, like there's no sheet music for pedal steel guitar for right. that same piece. Like, this is like, she's right. You know, she's figuring this out. So
yeah.
Which is just such a remarkable feat. And then the performance of it is, you know, haunting, and it brings out so many of the sounds of the pedal steel that, are just so alluring to me. Both like the saccharine sweetness of it, and also like the really dark, like overtone sort of world. Yeah. And so just the music, everything in it connects to such a deep place of like what I, you know, how I like to think and feel about music and creative practice, and Susan just being such an embodiment of that. I'd say, I mean, I could have chosen, you know, she also, you know, it's like she did a cover of Naima, and like, which is like flooring, and like, oh, the pedal steel can also do that. Like, there's a lot of right. her cover, you know, Astor Piazzolla, the tango pieces. Like, she was just like, let me watch, like, let me see. Cause like, and did so with great effectiveness, you know?
Yeah. I think it's, she's so embodied that, like, and I think about this a long time with like my own practice and stuff. It's like, what if we did this? Okay, let's try.
Yeah.
And like, it was, I mean, like there was, and then in her case, it's like, and then, you know, you see what goes into that. You see like how she embodied that and what, I don't know, man. She's like, I mean, she was one of the all time greats easily of like, not just pedals, not like just, you know, the instrument, but just in general. Like I just,
I feel anyone who, you know, came across her. And she lived between different, you know, musical worlds and communities. Like she would be, you know, country western, like, you know, she came up in that scene in Houston, and then, you know, free out improv worlds and, you know, New York. And, but then also like composition, you know, like she'd perform in big concert halls, and, you know, she lived in a lot of different spaces and communities. And so for people to be able to have like different relationships with an artist and be like, and to be, like she's, I don't know, like, so there's such humility in moving through those fears and being like, and like always, you know, like finding the like worthwhileness of all that, you know, it's, they're not like, not like performing these really elaborate classical pieces and then now looking at the country western world or the kind of more like, oh, that's, you know, so basic or that's beneath this level of music. I mean, she would tell me, she was just like, she, you know, last time I performed with her, she was, and I was doing whatever the weird shit I was doing with it. It was just like, that's good stuff, Sam. Don't forget about this, the standards, the basics, go back to that. There are, there, and she, I remember seeing there's gold in that, you know? And, so it's, I just, you know, I think that's a really beautiful way to think about things.
Yeah. All right. Last question. What is, at least in this moment in time, what is your favorite song?
So yeah, this was interesting because I was like, wait, didn't I already do that one? Which was like the best song, which is the Robert Wyatt. And, no, favorite song again, like, well, it's obviously like insane question. but I chose Night Falls on Hoboken. Yola Tango, which I think in some way, like, I don't know, it's funny, I feel like came to like, sorry, also if you hear my dog whining, it's like time for a walk, so that, I don't know if that's on the mic, but I say, so yeah, like, I really, you know, for the first chunk of my life, you know, of being involved in music was like, I was like interested in song, you know, like bands, rock bands and songs and songwriting and coming to like, you know, whatever more, you know, out musical forms, you know, later. And Yola Tango kind of opened that up to me a bit in high school. was like first hearing Green Arrows and being like, oh, this is just like a, it's like an ambient track. Like it's just kind of flat. It's like dynamically, you know, there's no like great crescendo or whatever. And it's just like an environment, you know, it's just like, a, it's just, you know, that's what's driving the, rather than like, I'm singing a song with a structure, like actually like what the top tier thing that I'm thinking about here is this sort of environmental piece. And so they were this band that was just like, up, you know, could go from like skronky, like guitar freak out stuff to like 1960s doo-wop-y kind of things. To like those albums are just like all the fuck over the place. And then so Night Falls on Hoboken was just like, oh, it was both, it's like the best of their worlds of just like, you know, like the calm, loose, ambling kind of song format. And like the hushed vocals, and then like them just being like, rather than like end the song at 3 minutes, which they totally could have done, they're like, let's just like drift the fuck out and like have a lot of weird technical sounds for the next 17 minutes. And you know, when I first heard that, right, it was before I was really hearing longer, you know, that kind of structure of things, like, oh, they, again, back to the thing, like there are no rules to be like a rock band. They could, you know, they were like, let me just like, you know, create a 20-minute track or whatever. And yeah, of course, just and then I can't even think about the album cover with that, the name, the poetic name of the title, Night Falls on Hoboken. I've never been to Hoboken, but it makes me think about night falling on Hoboken, you know, like, I love it.
Man, it's been interesting. Like Yola Tango has come up a lot in the last, on the show, the last couple months, and it's kind of like reminded me how much I just fucking love Yola Tango, and how for the longest, like they've been such an incredible band for so long. It is kind of unfathomable.
It really is. No, like, I mean, they really, and again, they're very alive present. I mean, they do these like a show. It's just like, they're obviously like older or getting up there, and they're like, nope, we're still doing like touring. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. They obviously bands do that. I just feel like they're really in it and real true blue.
Mm-hmm.
100%. That's cool.
Yeah. Well, all right, man, we made it through. Got through it. All of it. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Language at an Angle on January 30th. When is the Philly show?
Philly show is going to be February 5th. Atonement, presented by Fire Museum. So
sick. Everybody go.
Yeah.
Everybody go. Once again, big thanks to Sam Wentz. Be sure to go listen to all his picks at the link in the show notes, as well as picking up a copy and listening to Language at an Angle. You can preview a couple tracks on Bandcamp right now, which will really give you a good idea of what the record feels like, what it sounds like, and frankly, how awesome it is. So yeah, go ahead and throw a pre-order out there. So as always, I appreciate everybody who listen, supports the show, patreon.com/foxydigitalis. You know, if you want it, that ongoing support means a lot. Thank you to everybody who's done that. You get longer episodes, you get them a little early, and they are ad free. Or you can always grab stuff off the Jewel Garden, all those things. I don't know. But hey, mostly, I just appreciate y'all listening. Until next time, keep on listening to whatever the hell you want.